Chapter 20. Questions. We're at the end, and you probably have a few of them. If you've been paying attention closely, you probably have more than just a few. You should probably have more than you do. I've tried to be honest as I can be. I haven't lied about anything important. But some of the people in the story, well, they're lying for certain. No matter how much you think you know, there is always more to learn. It all has to do with librarians, knights, and, of course, fish sticks. Enjoy this next part. I'll see you in the epilogue. Aha! I said, pulling not one, but two pairs of translator's lenses from Fitzroy's jacket. The dark oculator himself lay tied up on the floor as we rode in the prince's giant glass pig. I told my soldiers to get some sort of equipment and dig to the corner of the archives room and remove the glass there, so that the librarians couldn't swap the room back and steal any of the other books.
I still don't understand what happened, Singh said, sitting nervously as our vehicle plodded toward the palace.
Oculators can power glass, I said, like lenses.
Lenses are magic, Singh said. That transporter's glass was technology.
The two are more similar than you think, Singh. In fact, I think all of these powers are connected. Do you remember what you said when you and I were hiding down there a few moments ago? The thing about your sister?
Sure, Singh said. I mentioned that I wished she'd been there because she could have imitated one of the librarians.
Which I could do with these, I said, holding up the pair of disguiser's lenses, which we'd retrieved from Fitzroy. Singh, these work just like Australia's talent does. If she falls asleep thinking about somebody, she wakes up looking just like them. Well, if I wear these and concentrate, I can do the same thing.
What are you saying, Alcatraz? Folsom asked.
I'm not sure, I admitted. It just seems suspicious to me. I mean, look at your talent. It makes you a better warrior when you hear music, right? He nodded. Well, what do Bastille's warrior's lenses do? I said. They make her a better fighter. My Uncle Kaz's talent lets him transport people across great distances, which sounds an awful lot like what that transporter's glass did.
Yes, Singh said. But what about your grandfather's talent? It lets him arrive late to things, and there aren't lenses that do that.
There are lots of types of glass we don't know about, I said. I picked up one of the rings of inhibitor's glass, which we'd managed to get off our arms using a set of keys in Fitzroy's pocket. You thought these were mythical.
Singh fell silent, and I turned, watching through the translucent walls as we approached the palace.
I think this is all related, I said more softly. The Smedri talents, Sulamatic technology, oculators, and whatever it is my mother is trying to accomplish, it's all connected. She didn't believe what she said about the librarians ruling everything. She wasn't certain. She has different goals from the other librarians. But what are they?
I sighed, shaking my head, reaching over to pick up the book we'd brought from the archives. At least we had it, as well as both pairs of translator's lenses. I slipped the lenses on, then glanced at the first page.
Soups for Everyone, it read. A Guide to the Best Greek and Incarna Cooking.
I froze.
I flipped through the book anxiously, then took off the lenses and tried the other pair. Both showed the same thing. This wasn't the same book.
What? Singh asked. Alcatraz, what is it?
She switched books on us, I said, frustrated. This isn't the book on Incarna history. It's the cookbook. I'd seen her work with deft fingers before, when she'd snatched the Sands of Rashid right out from under my nose back in my room in the Hushlands. Plus, she had access to my father's talent of losing things, and might be of help in hiding stuff. I slammed the book back down on the table. Around me, the rich, red-furnished room shook as the glass pig continued on its way.
That's not important right now, Bastille said in an exhausted voice. She sat on the couch beside Folsom in Himalaya, and she looked like she'd gotten even worse since we'd left the librarians. Her eyes were unfocused, as if she'd been drugged, and she kept rubbing her temples. "We need to stop the treaty first," she said. "Your mother can't do anything with that book as long as you have both pairs of translator's lenses." She was right. Mokia had to be our focus now. As the pig pulled up to the palace, I took a deep breath. "All right," I said. "You all know what to do." Singh, Folsom, Himalaya, and Prince Rikers each nodded. We discussed our plan during the chapter break.
Neener, neener.
"The librarians aren't likely to let this go smoothly," I said, "but I doubt there will be much they can do with all of the soldiers and knights guarding the palace. However, they're librarians, so be ready for anything." They nodded again. We prepared to go, and the door on the pig's butt opened. I think that undermined our dramatic exit. Bastille stood to go with us, wobbling on unsteady feet.
Bastille, I said, "I think you should wait here."
She gave me a stiff glance, the kind that made me feel like I'd just been smacked across the face with a broom. I took that as her answer.
"All right," I said with a sigh. "Let's go, then."
We marched out of the pig and up the steps. Prince Rikers called for guards immediately. I think he just liked the drama of having a full troop of soldiers with us. Indeed, our entrance into the hallway, with the wall-hanging panes of glass, was rather intimidating. The Knights of Crystallia, standing at attention in the hallway, saluted us as we passed, and I felt significantly more safe knowing they were there.
"Do you think your mother will have warned the others of what happened?" Singh whispered.
"I doubt it," I said.
"Mother's allies contacted She Who Cannot Be Named to gloat over having captured some valuable prisoners. You don't call to gloat over having lost those same prisoners. I think we'll surprise them."
"I hope so," Singh said as we approached the doors to the council room.
We nodded to the pair of knights, and then I stepped aside.
"Time for your big entrance, Your Highness," I said, gesturing for Prince Rikers.
"Really?" he said. "I get to do it?"
"Go ahead," I said.
The prince dusted himself off. He smiled broadly, then strode through the doors into the chamber and bellowed in a loud voice,
"In the name of all that is just, I demand these proceedings to be halted."
Down below, the monarch sat around their table. A large document set out before them. King Darkmoor held a quill in his hand, poised to sign. We'd arrived just in the nick of time. What the heck is a nick, anyway? The monarch's table sat in the open area in the center of the room, between the two raised sets of bleacher-like seats that were filled with patrons. Knights of Crystallia stood in a ring around the bottom of the floor, between the people and the rulers. They were most concentrated, I noticed, near where the librarian sat. She Who Cannot Be Named sat at the front of the librarian group, pleasantly knitting an afghan.
"What is this?"
King Darkmoor asked as the rest of my team piled into the room.
"The librarians are lying to you, father," Rikers declared. "They tried to kidnap me."
"Why, that's the most distressing thing I've ever heard," said She Who Cannot Be Named.
"You know what? That name is really too hard to type all the time. From here on, I'm going to call her Swickbin." My companions looked at me. I wore the truth-finder spectacles, one eye closed to look through the single lens. Unfortunately, Swickbin hadn't said anything that was false. She'd avoided doing so deliberately, I'm sure.
"Father," Prince Riker said, "we can provide proof of what happened."
He waved behind him, and the two knights we'd brought with us entered, carrying the tied and gagged Fitzroy.
"This is a librarian of the Order of the Dark Oculators. He was involved in a plot to steal books from the Royal Archives."
"Mumph moo, mumph oomph," Fitzroy added.
"Which turned into a plot to kidnap me, the royal heir," Rikers continued.
Rikers certainly did know how to get into a part. He didn't seem as much a buffoon now that he was in his element of the court.
"Lady Librarian," King Darkmoor said, turning to Swickbin,
"I'm not sure what is happening," she said. Another half-truth that didn't come out as a lie. "She does, Your Majesty," I declared, stepping up. "She ordered the death of Himalaya, who is now a member of the Smedri clan." That caused a stir.
"Lady Librarian," the king said, red-bearded face growing very stern, "is what he says true, or is it false?"
"I'm not sure if you should be asking me, dear. It's quite..."
"Answer the question," the king bellowed. "Have librarians been plotting to steal and kidnap from us while these very treaty hearings have been occurring?"
The grandmotherly librarian looked at me, and I could tell that she knew she was caught. "I think," she said, "that my team and I should be granted a short recess to discuss."
"No recess," the king said. "Either you answer as asked, or I'm tearing this treaty in half this instant."
The elderly librarian pursed her lips, then finally set down her knitting. "I will admit," she said, "that some other branches of the librarians have been pursuing their own ends in the city. However, this is one of the main reasons we are signing this treaty, so that you can give my sect the authority it needs to stop the other sects from continuing this needless war."
"And the execution of my beloved?" Folsom demanded.
"In my eyes, young man," Swickbin said, "that one is a traitor and a turncoat. How would your own laws treat someone who committed treason?" The room fell still. Where was my grandfather? His seat at the table was noticeably empty.
"Considering this information," said King Dartmoor, "how many of you now vote against signing the treaty?"
5 of the 12 monarchs raised their hands.
"And I assume Smedri would still vote against the signing," Dartmoor said, assuming he hadn't stormed out in anger. "That leaves 6 against 6. I am the deciding vote."
"Father," the prince called, "what would a hero do?" The king hesitated. Then, embarrassingly, he looked up at me. He stared me in the eyes. Then he ripped the treaty in two.
"I find it telling," he declared to Swickbin, "that you cannot control your own people despite the importance of these talks. I find it disturbing that you would be willing to execute one of your own for joining a kingdom with which you claim you want to be friends. And most of all, I find it disgusting what I nearly did. I want you librarians out of my kingdom by midnight. These talks are at an end."
The room exploded with sound. There were quite a number of cheers, many of these coming from the section where the Mokians, Australia included, were sitting. There were some boos, but mostly there was just a lot of excited chatter. Drowlin approached the ranks of knights, laying a hand on the king's shoulder and, in a rare moment of emotion, nodded. She actually thought that ripping up the treaty was a good idea. Maybe that meant she'd see Bastille's help in this entire mess as validation for restoring her daughter's knighthood. I glanced about for Bastille, but she wasn't to be found. Sing tapped my arm and pointed behind. I could see Bastille in the hallway, sitting in a chair, arms wrapped around herself, shivering. She'd lost her warrior's lenses back when we'd been captured, and I could see that her eyes were red and puffy. My first instinct was to go to her, but something made me hesitate. Swickbin didn't seem particularly disturbed by these events. She turned back to her knitting. That bothered me.
"Socrates," I whispered.
"What's that, Alcatraz?" Sing asked. "This guy I learned about in school," I said. "He was one of those annoying types who always asked questions."
Okay,
Singh said. Something was wrong. I began asking questions that should have bothered me long before this. Why was the most powerful librarian in all of the Hushlands here to negotiate a treaty that the monarchs had already decided to sign? Why wasn't she worried at being surrounded by her enemies, capable of being captured and imprisoned at a moment's notice? Why did I feel so unsettled, as if we hadn't really won after all? At that moment, Drowlin screamed. She collapsed to the ground, holding her head. Then every knight of Crystallia in the room dropped to the ground, crying out in pain.
"Hello, everyone!" a voice suddenly cried. I spun to find my grandfather standing behind us. "I'm back! Did I miss anything important?"